You are listening to Tech Talk, guys.
Okay, welcome to episode 10 of Tech Talk, guys, with Bill and Joe. And today we've got a guest. Chris, welcome to the Tech Talk, guys.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Joe.
Really glad to have you here. So today's big announcement is Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference. Apple announced a number of new products today, and we would like Chris to talk about what his thoughts are on the new Apple product line. So to begin, Joe hasn't heard anything about the product launch, so he's going to hear everything firsthand from us today. Take it away, Chris.
So I've been looking forward to this announcement for several weeks. I recently started a new job, and I'm in a position now where I'm like, okay, I need a new rig here. I need a new, you know, workstation or whatever. And I had been eyeing the iMacs, been, you know, trying to see, okay, what are they going to come out with here? And then lately had had several people talking to me about the Airs, saying, hey, you know, you need to go with an Air. That's where it's at. So I was really just waiting with bated breath to see what Apple is actually going to announce here. And, you know, as it turns out, a very exciting day for Apple. They really blew everybody away, I think. They definitely released some updates to the MacBook Air, both the 11 and the 13-inch, and the 15-inch MacBook Pros. Now, interesting to note, no more 17-inch MacBook Pro. It has gone bye-bye. They didn't say anything about it. It just quietly disappeared. So I have one sitting next to me, and that's actually what I'm recording on right now. So I can say I will be sad to see that go. It is a very nice machine. But they introduced what is probably the most exciting laptop I've seen in forever, probably since the MacBook Air came out, and that is the next-gen MacBook Pro, which has a Retina display in the same way that the Apple iPad, you know, new generation does. It is, I believe it's 2880 by 1800 or something ridiculous like that.
That's it.
It's just a fantastic resolution. So
it's 5.1 megapixels of resolution on a laptop screen.
Yeah, and that's all packed into a 15-inch screen space. So, and I was just reading actually on a non-tech about the scaling that's offered. So even if you don't want to use the, you know, the pixel doubling stuff, you can scale out to a 1920 by 1200 or something. You know, you can basically scale out to a very high definition display. So you have the screen real estate that you would have had on a 17-inch, obviously with smaller tech, smaller resources, etc. But the performance in the thing is also exciting. Like it's a beast. They took away the optical drive. They took away the Ethernet. They made it small. They made it compact. But they, you know, put solid state drives in it. The one I just ordered today has 16 gigs of RAM and a 512 gig solid state hard drive. Will be a screaming machine.
So, Joe, what are your first thoughts after hearing those specs?
It's pretty insane. it's amazing to have that much pixel density in a laptop screen. I mean, that's going to be phenomenal. I was excited about what was happening today, but knowing that we were going to record, I actually am walking into this completely blind. Other than a few texts that you sent me, Bill, I have no idea about the specs. So everything's Chris telling me is like first news right there. So that's pretty amazing.
What's really crazy is when you add up the fully loaded price. Now, there's a couple of things that this system will do that Chris didn't mention in the one he ordered. You can actually go up to 768 gigs of solid state storage.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That was an extra $500 on top of what the 512 megs was. So,
yep. And that if you take a fully loaded MacBook Pro with Retina display, it's $3,749 fully outfitted.
Jeez, wow.
Well, the one thing I love about this is, you know, you've seen these new Ultra notebooks coming out, Samsung, Dell, everybody's been, you know, trying to play catch up to the MacBook Air. And as soon as they get there, Apple just leaps ahead and goes one step further. So pretty crazy.
The one thing I'm really excited about with this thing, too, is, you know, with the Thunderbolt technology, obviously that's nothing new. That's been around for a generation. But it's going to be new to me, and I'm going to have a 27-inch Thunderbolt display with this thing as well. So here I have the small package of this, you know, new ultralight professional series MacBook, in addition to this Thunderbolt connectivity with this display that's basically going to be my dock. So I can have all the storage I need attached to this thing. I can have Ethernet attached to this if I want to. I mean, it is an awesome package. I'm sitting here using a 27-inch iMac at the moment, and I will happily give this thing up and replace it with the new MacBook.
Now, Joe, one thing that was a big part of the announcement today is that they're not having an Ethernet port on the side of the MacBook Pro 15.
Mm.
They're going to have a dongle that will go into the 10 gigabit Thunderbolt port, as well as I heard somebody say that they're going to also offer a FireWire 800 dongle.
It's for sale on the store right now.
So that would be good. That's the one main thing that I have missed switching from a 15-inch MacBook Pro down to a 13-inch MacBook Air is all the FireWire peripherals that I purchased, I can't use. So I'll probably take a look at that and order one of those.
Another interesting thing to note, Bill, is they moved away from the traditional MagSafe connector. They've reintroduced the T-style MagSafe. So, you know, with the Airs, they introduced that L-style, which I liked personally. So I'm interested to see how this new design is going to be. But you actually have to buy a $10 adapter if you want to use a traditional MagSafe adapter with a new MacBook.
Hmm. You know, I'm wondering with the iPhone 5 leaked information this week, where they're talking about narrowing the connector from a 30 pin down to something smaller. I wonder why Apple's going about changing the connectors in their series. It seems kind of strange. I guess it's an opportunity to sell more accessories.
And Steve Jobs isn't there to say no.
Well, so to talk about those MagSafe adapters, I wanted to understand a little bit more about this T versus L. So right now I run an 11-inch MacBook Air, the generation before this latest update. So I have, what, the L-shaped one right now. So what's this T-shaped one going to be like?
So the L-shape is it's got a metallic end to it.
Right.
There's a right angle where the actual MagSafe connector connects to the laptop. Some people complained about how it would cover some ports depending on which direction you had it going.
Oh, okay. Yep.
But it was fundamentally a better design from a reliability standpoint. It didn't suffer the fraying that the old T-style did. So I haven't seen what the new one looks like. I just know they've gone back to a similar design but thinner profile.
Now, you know what I was curious about is, you know, with those leaked photos of that new iPhone and how it has that smaller shaped connector, is it just my imagination or is that about the size of a MagSafe connector? I would be very interested if the new iPhone 5 had like a MagSafe type of connection for charging.
I wouldn't see how they could pass the data over that. MagSafe is only 4 pins.
Oh, that is true. I didn't think about that part.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that goes on in the dock connector, the 30-pin connector. I mean, they use it for all kinds of different things, but...
Well, yet, a USB cable is only really 4 conductor.
It is, but they use more than just a standard 4 USB. They add extra power in there. They use it for AV output. They use all kinds of different functions on it.
Another announcement today was about the changes in the MacBook Air line. One of the big changes is a price drop. They've now dropped most of the MacBook Airs $100. The base MacBook Air 11-inch is still $999. All the models up above, I think the base 13-inch now is $1,199 instead of $1,299 like before. And a fully loaded MacBook Air now can have a dual-core Core i7, 8 gigs of RAM, and 512 gigs of solid-state storage. That total price tag for that fully loaded 13-inch MacBook Air would be $2,199.
That is such a good deal. For such a portable little workstation, that is... I think Apple is handing everybody else their shorts.
So what do you think of those specs, Joe?
That is pretty insane. I mean, after I got my little 11-inch MacBook Air, I got it personally because I got it for basically half off. I won an iPad that I didn't really need because I already had another one. I was able to trade it in and use it to buy a MacBook Air, and so I just went ahead and for the 11-inch. And I'll tell you, even though my 11-inch is not 8 gigs and i7 and all that other good stuff that you just mentioned, this MacBook Air is my everything now. I don't carry another work laptop at all. This definitely does it for me. And if I were to have the option to get that much horsepower in a package so svelte and slim, I would do it in a heartbeat.
I actually had a hard time choosing like whether to go with the Retina or just like an 11-inch or 13-inch MacBook Air. I mean, those are such attractive machines because of their size and that power in there as well. It's amazing.
Yeah, but I think as a developer, Chris, you would appreciate the quad-core versus the dual-core Core i7 processor.
Oh, and I will. And the 16 gigs of RAM, I mean, I'm going to be able to do just about as much on it as I can on my iMac.
Yep. Definitely an incredible machine. Another big announcement today is the release of iOS 6.
I am running it on my phone right now.
So you are going ahead and running the developer preview.
Yep, I'm looking at it right now. I've checked out maps. It's pretty slick. I'm liking it.
So let's fill Joe in on a couple of the highlights. They've changed their map technology from Google Maps over to their own map system. What else was in that? Facebook integration was another thing that was announced today.
The same way that they integrated Twitter, it's system-wide Facebook integration with developer API exposed now as well.
And the iPad 3 will have Siri as well, coming in the fall. Full Siri integration. And FaceTime over cellular networks. That's going to be something that I will appreciate.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget about the new Siri features as well, though. I was pretty impressed with the demo they were showing.
So now Siri will have more information or more intelligence. So you can ask it a question, who is taller, LeBron or Kobe? And Siri will respond, LeBron appears slightly taller.
Siri now knows all about your favorite sports. She now knows, she knows about reviews for restaurants. They've partnered with Yelp and they're now offering reviews in line. So you could say, you know, show me all the Thai food nearby. And she'd say, you know, here's 12 Thai places nearby. And, you know, here's the reviews on them. You can see all the Yelp information right there built in right into the Siri screen. It's pretty slick.
And I guess in July, we will start having access to Mountain Lion for $19.99 for the download, the new version of the OS X. Have either of you heard any rumors about OS 11? I never really see anything about it. Any talk in any of the blogs you frequent?
I haven't heard word one about it. I mean, it seems like they're due for a major update to, you know, their operating system. But because, you know, the past two, three have been incremental. There haven't been any major new features, haven't been anything groundbreaking. And so it makes me wonder, like, what, you know, when are they going to come up with something that blows away? You know, the same way Windows 8 was a pretty big increment over Windows 7. Not just increment, pretty big, you know, milestone.
Right. I think what's happening is Apple's having to respond to the onslaught of the ARM processor revolution. I mean, so much of the 80s, 90s, and the first part of this decade have been x86 chips. And now these lower cost, reduced instruction set chips are coming out and really making a dent. And that's one of the reasons that Apple bought a chip manufacturer so they could create their own processors for the iPhone. And now it's in the iPad, it's in the Apple TV. And that ARM-based chipset is starting to take over the industry. And I think Windows 8 is Microsoft's answer to a changing world. The chips are changing out from under them.
So I want to backpedal a little bit to talk more about iOS 6. I'm trying to browse a few websites here, but I'd rather hear it straight from you guys. Being a bit of an Android fanboy on my side, one thing that I definitely appreciate in Android over iOS is mapping. And you guys kind of touched on the mapping, but do we have a true iOS navigation built right into iOS 6, or is it still too early to determine that?
We do now. Siri now will give me directions, turn-by-turn navigation to wherever I want to go. I can ask her questions like, hey, Siri, how long till I get there? I could even try it right now if you wanted to hear it.
Yeah, sure. That'd be cool.
Siri, give me directions to McDonald's. This is actually the first time I've tried this.
I found 11 places matching McDonald's. Tap the one you want directions to.
Okay, so I'm tapping
getting
the McDonald's.
Directions to McDonald's.
Okay, so now she's pulled up directions to McDonald's for me. And I'm going to hit start.
Starting route to McDonald's. Starting route to McDonald's.
So obviously I'm not driving right now, so I can't exactly simulate the turn by turn, but what I'm seeing on my screen is she's actually showing me a heads-up view here, and as I'm navigating, she's going to tell me, "Hey, turn left up here, etc." So it's gonna be a fair competitor to the the Google Maps app on Android. And I honestly got to tell you, it's something I've been pretty jealous of about Android for a while. That's about the only thing I'm really like, man, I wish iOS had that. But
yeah, yeah.
Now I'm not jealous anymore.
Well, no, you know, I know back in 2011 at CES, there was a company, a Swedish company, I believe, and we'll provide links in the show notes, that did some pretty neat 3D mapping using some Saab technology with some side-scanning imaging and then some algorithm, so it did a lot better mapping. And that company quietly got absorbed by Apple and then never heard anything else from it. And so I kind of had thought that this would be built into the iOS 6 as far as the, you know, the whole news about Apple kicking Google out, because I know Google was charging an arm and leg to use their data centers for all their Google Maps calls. But, yeah, I am pretty interested and excited to see what this iOS 6 will look like, because no matter what, Apple definitely makes a beautiful product when it comes to some of those things. And, I've always wanted to see what navigation from Apple would look like, because the Android built-in one, as far as how smoothly it works throughout the platform, has always been my go-to thing, because even though I have an iOS device with my iPhone 4 and my Android, I'm always going to my Android for navigation. But now with iOS 6, it might change.
You know, I actually got a chance to see some of that 3D tech today when I was playing around with the Maps application. I didn't see anything here in Richmond. I checked downtown Richmond. There was no 3D mapping readily apparent in the app. But I decided to try San Francisco, and I was browsing in a residential district of San Francisco, zoomed in real close, and I was like rotating around in 3D, and I saw these houses appearing in 3D as, you know, the landscape was starting to scale up, and I could see all the terrain mapping and everything. And then here's these houses mapped with their you know, their aerial data in 3D. It's pretty slick.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I can't wait to see that personally.
Okay, guys, where do you want to go from here?
Was anything else significant from the conference that I missed that maybe someone would want to know about?
I think there was a significance in what wasn't talked about at the conference, and that was the Mac Pro bump. You know, they did a slight Mac Pro bump. And it was really, it left a lot of the creative professionals that depend on those machines kind of just hanging and going, hey, what about us? I'm not even sure exactly what specs they bumped, but I know that they didn't add USB 3, they didn't add Thunderbolt, they didn't add a lot of this new technology that everybody's been waiting on. It's like, okay, do you even care about us anymore? Because there's so many people that use these machines on a daily basis.
I'm wondering if Apple's trying to push the community over to the MacBook Pro.
You know, I was talking to a friend of mine who works in motion graphics out of L.A. A little bit ago, actually, and asking him what his opinions were on the MacBook Pro. And he said he's really worried about what that will mean for his industry, because here's this, you know, incredibly high DPI device that everybody's going to want to see content native. It's limited in storage compared to what a MacBook Pro would be, or a Mac Pro would be compared. You know, you have all these RAID drives and everything. It's not as powerful in multi-core wise. You know, when you got 12 cores you're working with and you're having to render something that's well above 72 DPI, which is what your normal screen resolution is going to be, it's going to create problems for them. So they're eyeing this very cautiously and going, okay, Apple, what are you thinking here?
Wow.
Well, are there any new Intel chips on the horizon that could be released soon that would give Apple a huge bump, you know, dual eight core processors or 12 core processors that they may be waiting for to release a new Mac Pro line with?
I haven't heard anything of the sort.
Nah, neither have I.
One thing that was a little sad to see, I noticed in the on the website that the MacBook is no longer there. And at first I thought, well, they just ditched the MacBook without saying anything, the old classic white or black MacBook. And then as I did a little research today, I noticed that they actually discontinued that back in 2011. Without much fanfare.
I never noticed.
Yeah, even going into the clearance store on Apple, the MacBook entry was still there. It was grayed out, but they didn't have any for sale. So I'll always be a little nostalgic about that MacBook laptop. That was my first personal entry into the Mac world, was a little white MacBook Core 2 Duo machine. I still got it. I'm looking at it right now.
Well, with the Air, you know, being the price that it is, what the lower end model is $999, right? I mean, what's the point of having that MacBook anymore?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was sitting there thinking, I spent about $1,200 for my MacBook that had 2 gigahertz Core 2 Duo. I think it had 2 gigs of RAM and a 250 gig hard drive. No, 200 gig hard drive to start. And if you look at the entry-level MacBook Air, I mean, it's right around the same spec for a much, much faster, better machine.
Oh,
with
yeah.
Solid state.
That solid state is going to win anybody over.
Inversely, I have kind of an interesting viewpoint, and this has nothing to do with any other affiliation because I love my Mac stuff. But I work in the education industry, and the MacBook was the go-to device for any school district that wanted to do Apple because it was cheap. very easy to maintain, removable battery. It was kind of the machine of choice for every district that I work with that uses Apple. The kids, teachers, they had the MacBooks. And so when that went the way of, you know, the dinosaurs, basically, I actually have districts that are switching off of Apple. They're switching back to Dells and all. And I know it's a subpar product, unfortunately, but they just can't afford to service and maintain MacBook Pros, and they definitely can't be giving out MacBook Airs to K through 12 students, because I don't think they'd survive in some of those backpacks. So, I still have mixed feelings about those MacBooks leaving, because it's a somewhat of a detriment, because, you know, Windows makes so many machines so cheap, but they don't have the same sort of productivity suites. They don't have the same design elements and
they don't have the panache.
Yeah, exactly.
Bill, did you see the picture of the new MacBook Pro being held in the vice grips and twisted?
I did. I watched the video today.
It reminded me of what he was saying about the MacBooks and the backpacks. And you remember the MacBook that I turned over when I ended my employment?
Yes.
And how bent up that thing was. I was very glad to see them doing that kind of testing, because that was just for me having that thing in a backpack, and it got warped.
Oh yeah, it was. I think the hinge broke on the LCD display and everything else.
And that was before the unibodies, of course. And I think the unibodies have held up a whole lot better. But
oh yeah,
it's definitely a big step in Apple's future. And you know, talking back about the Mac Pro versus the MacBook Pro, Apple's becoming a consumer company. It's never really been about business users. And maybe we're seeing that play out in their product line. You know, maybe it is the end of the road for Mac. You know, if you look at it, Final Cut Studio 3 was a real step backwards for Apple. They really missed it with the professional community. A lot of the pros still want to use Final Cut 2 because the consumer easy features that they added to Final Cut 3 actually thwarted performance and things and usability for the professional. So maybe this is just down that long road of Apple going, we're a consumer product company. We're going to cater to the consumer. We're not going to cater to the high end. Who knows? Maybe this is that trail.
It seems strange to me that they'd head that direction, though, because for so long, it was the creative professionals that were the ones that were always in Apple's corner. I've been using computers since I was 7 years old, so we're talking 23 years. And I used an Apple IIe or something when I was, you know, 7, 8, 9, something like that. And throughout my professional career, I've, you know, been exposed to Macs, but never really used any. I was always very against them. I was very much anti-Apple, anti-Mac. I just didn't like the interface. I didn't like how it worked. But I always had all these creative professionals going, man, you're missing out. This is the best thing ever. And it was always these graphic designers, these video editors that were always just like, hey, Mac is where it's at. Apple's where it's at. And as they switched, you know, they when Steve Jobs came back into the picture and they introduced their, you know, the Intel line and all that, that's when I really decided to give it a chance. But creative professionals have always been their core, the core people who are so, you know, the fanboys, essentially. So it seems kind of strange that they leave them hanging.
Well, if you think about it, an iMac 27 is probably all the machine most designer or creative professionals will need. It's really the video editing crews that need the even beefier machines than that. This new MacBook Pro 15-inch that we've been talking about today is an insanely powerful device for the size and the money.
Well, it is insanely powerful, but the number of cores it has is going to make a big difference in, you know, rendering situations with graphics applications.
Well, you know, I mean, Photoshop, it should be more than fast enough for Photoshop.
Especially if you're using your SSD as a swap disk, man.
And you have 16 gigs of RAM, so yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, well, anything else we want to touch on tonight, guys?
I'm just waiting for the angry Hitler meme from all those people that'll be upset about this, that, or the other. I remember when you mentioned the Final Cut thing, there was the angry Hitler meme about how people couldn't imagine what they had done to Final Cut from what it was before. So I'm sure there's going to be some memes based off of this one too, because there's just as many people that are pleased as there are probably upset, like you said, with the creative professionals.
Well, I mean, even the Conan O'Brien show, his video editors made a whole spoof.
That was great.
Yeah. So, yeah, you definitely don't want to tick off the arts community. And Chris, you got a great point there.
Yeah.
I think maybe Apple's just not ready to refresh because they see something on the horizon just around the corner from a chipset standpoint that they want to take advantage of. Or maybe they're looking to see if graphics processing units or GPU performance takes another huge evolutionary leap for rendering and things like that. And they're waiting for that right around the corner.
It could be. You know, a couple minor things we didn't touch on from the conference today. The power nap. Did you see about that, Bill?
I did, but I didn't really grasp it. Is it just like a background updating system?
Yeah, it's background syncing, background backing up. You know, it'll sync to Time Capsule for you. It'll download App Store updates, system updates, and have it all ready for you when you resume your system. So that seems kind of interesting.
That's one thing I've really appreciated about the Android platform is apps automatically updating for me. I don't have to go back to the App Store, select, you know, 15 apps need to be updated, and you know, hit authorize for all of them to go. With the Android platform, it's just like, yeah, forever, I want you to automatically update. Go ahead and take care of it. And I appreciate that.
That's pretty cool, as long as it doesn't have a breaking update.
Well, Chris, I think a challenge to you is to pick out a good Android tablet, something running version 4 Ice Cream Sandwich of their OS, and tell us what you think. I've been impressed so far.
Do I have to?
I would have said that about 2 months ago, but the more I've started to play with it, the more I've forgotten how much fun it is to tinker with systems. You know, Apple's really gotten us into this habit of the system is the system, don't mess with it. But it's quite fun to go in and peek under the curtain and do what you got to do to make something feel a little more personal the way you like it. So
that's what jailbreaking's for.
See, I don't jailbreak anymore.
I definitely could do that, but I'll tell you, you know, I bought the iPad 3, the 4G LTE model, 16 gig. I have never been happier with a device than this thing. It has been the perfect tablet for me. I just can't imagine wanting something different than this thing.
Well, you know, that's the beauty of getting an Android tablet if you already have an iPad, because you don't have to worry about breaking it so badly that you are left stranded. You still got your iPad. So, yeah, it's just something to play with. I'll show you what I've got. I'll show you my tablet a little later. You can see what you think about it.
All right.
But I think Google is making some inroads. I really do.
You know, I'm an iOS developer. I've developed iPhone, you know, plenty of iPhone apps. Just released my first iPad app last week. And so tons of iOS experience, never touched anything with Google, but I was reading some of the developer documentation for Ice Cream Sandwich, and it looks to me like they're heading in the right direction. They're heading towards a more unified design experience. They're heading more, you know, they're making design important. They're making the user experience important and trying to express that to the developers. And I think that's what's been lacking on the Android platform that Apple does extremely well, is Apple wants everything to be pretty. It wants everything to be coherent so that a user, you know, my grandma could pick up an iPhone and figure the thing out in 15 minutes.
I couldn't agree more. Google was running the risk of becoming Microsoft, where they let every manufacturer load whatever bloatware on the device they wanted at the time they shipped it to you. Bringing standards and homogenizing the user experience across all the Android platforms is going to be a big key to their future success.
The only way I could see they could make it more successful, though, is to figure out a way to reduce the fragmentation for the developers somewhat, though. As a developer, I have no interest in touching Android because of fragmentation. I would have to have 30 devices in my office to be able to really fully test any app I'm developing.
Well, I don't think that's as much the case with Ice Cream Sandwich. Joe, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I definitely think fragmentation is an issue. Ice Cream Sandwich definitely unifies the platform, so you get a very similar experience. But, I mean, I know I was just reading that of all the Android users out there, of the millions that are out there on all the different devices, whatever they may be, I think only something to the tune of 8 to 10% are actually running Ice Cream Sandwich. And the problem really comes down to the carriers get involved and they want to customize it, tweak it, and load it full of the Sprint NFL app and the NASCAR this app and the TV this whatever. And then the Ice Cream Sandwich updates never, ever get to the devices. And just like you were saying about fragmentation, there's like four different versions of the Samsung Galaxy S There's one for AT&T, one, actually there's two for AT&T, one for Sprint, one for Verizon, and each one slightly different here or there. And it's not just the difference between GSM and CDMA. It's even goofy things like whether one has a flash or not. And I really don't understand why they opt those things in or not. Like Chris was saying, I definitely think design is a huge element that has improved greatly in Ice Cream Sandwich. And like I mentioned in last episode, having Matias Duarte, who was originally from the WebOS team, come over has really helped with Honeycomb and Ice Cream Sandwich getting a little bit more pretty, a little bit better design. I mean, even to the point where with Ice Cream Sandwich, they developed a font that's totally an Apple thing, developing a font for a product. Because typography was always a big thing for Steve Jobs. You know, you can read about that in the Isaacson biography. But it's definitely getting better. I will not deny the fact that Android is fragmented and you get kind of different experiences across the board. But like Bill said, the ability to tinker, that kind of old school hacker style of things where you can get in there and I can overclock my processor or underclock it. That's just the fun part because, you know, I have mine so tweaked out that, you know, when I turn the screen off, it dials back all of the power. And then when I turn it back on, it fully fledges up to 1.6 gigahertz or whatever. So it's awesome because I get like 2 days of battery life out of a device that under any normal circumstance, if I left it up to the developer up to the carrier, it would die within 5 hours. But, you know, you're able to tinker with it and mess with it. It's almost like it's like one of those little custom cars that you're always fiddling with.
Well, and the point there, you know, talking about the different platforms and the carriers, I don't think it's as much the carriers as it is the manufacturers. I mean, Samsung made a choice somewhere to release all these different versions of the Galaxy line. The other thing I've noticed while trying to go back and load Ice Cream Sandwich on some older devices, you have to have at least a dual core machine to really run Ice Cream Sandwich. And so it doesn't surprise me that only 8-9% of the market out there is running version 4, because frankly, the specs are pretty high. And there are a lot of slower, older smartphones out there in the Android space.
Did you see the iOS 5 adoption numbers today in the presentation, Bill?
I didn't.
It was something ridiculously high. I could be totally misquoting this, so you may have to go look it up and provide it in the show notes, but I believe it's something like 70-80% of devices have upgraded to iOS 5.
Oh yeah, I did see that in the blog notes from the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, to me as a developer, that's a big deal. Because if as they're releasing new features, I need to be able to target these features and know that my users are going to have them. If I'm an Android developer, you know, trying to develop for ICS, and hey, only 7-8% of actual Android users are going to be able to take advantage of these features or even use my application at all. I mean, that's a big deal to me. So I think Google needs to figure some things out in that department and try to reduce that margin a bit.
Well, I think it's just going to be time. I think what we're seeing is they've got the right roadmap. They just are going to need time for the developers and the carriers to get behind it. But in most Android development, you can develop for 2.1 or 2.2 of their operating system, and the apps will work all the way up through Honeycomb version 3, all the way up to Ice Cream Sandwich. So I'm not seeing many issues there about apps scaling up nicely.
Well, you can do that with iOS as well. I mean, it creates a large burden for the developers. If, like, for instance, you know, they release storyboards with iOS 5, big feature for developers, makes our lives a whole lot easier. I can't use that for anything that's targeting less than iOS 5.
Right.
So it's a decision you have to make. You draw the line here and say, I'm sorry, if you don't have iOS 5, you can't use this app.
Right. Joe?
Well, fair enough. I think I'm missing parts of the conversation. My network connectivity might be dropping over here at the DoubleTree. It's not really the best under new. So I didn't hear some of the conversation. Sorry.
No problem. All right, guys. Well, I think we've got enough to call this a wrap. Any last comments we want to throw in?
Well, I think we need to make our usual, Chris, just to understand, we kind of make a product placement even though we don't get sponsored by anybody. So I would like to give a shout out to the Mophie Juice Pack, which is what I use for my iPhone. as heavily as I use all of my devices, both Android and iOS, I can wear out the battery on one of these guys by 12 o'clock, no matter what. I do a lot of social media for my company. I do a lot of email, all kinds of stuff, a lot of photos. And I can usually wear a device out very quickly. And especially with the iPhone, since it's my corporate phone, I need it for my email. And the Mophie Juice Pack, it's about $79.99 or so. It's a phenomenal device. Lets me basically use my iPhone battery until it's almost dead. Then I just flip a little switch, and then it'll give me actually a full charge. And what's great about it is since it's a very slim case that goes around the iPhone, I don't actually have to have, you know, Sharper Image and Kensington, they had these little power bricks that plugged onto the bottom. And then you ended up with a device that was about nearly 10 inches long, this giant, long, skinny thing. But the Mophie pack goes right around the iPhone and makes it very slim. And Mophie just sent me an email, and they're about to come out with a really heavy-duty, bulky one, which I know for some people, a bulky and iPhone doesn't really go well together. But when I travel, I'm fairly rough on my devices. I need a case around everything. And the new one looks like a marriage between the Mophie and an OtterBox. So it's a pretty good defense as well as power. So that's my little shout-out for the end of the episode is to the Mophie Juice Pack.
All right.
Well, I got a shout-out if I can give one as well.
Go right ahead.
I just received, finally, my Eyelid Mark I iPhone case. It's actually a iPhone wallet, and there's several of those products out there. But what's impressive about this thing is it is thin. It just adds a few millimeters onto the back of the iPhone, and it will hold several credit cards. I think I've had like four credit cards in here, and some cash as well, and a medium-sized key. And I've stopped carrying my wallet now. It's great. I mean, hardly any extra space in my pocket, and I've got everything I need to get throughout the day. Love it. It was a Kickstarter project that actually, they had some manufacturing issues and whatever. It took them like 6 months to finally deliver on what they were selling, maybe even longer than that, I believe. I just got involved with it in January, but finally delivered. It's been a very, very well-received product. I'm very happy with it.
Well, Chris, we'll have to have you back for a conversation about Kickstarter projects. I've contributed to two. I haven't received the product yet, but it would be a good conversation to have.
Totally. Happy to come back.
We're glad to have you. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Definitely.
Oh.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, this is the end of another Tech Talk, guys. I'm Bill.
And I'm Joe.
And I'm Chris.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Tech Talk Guys with Bill and Joe. If you'd like to find out more about this podcast, please go to our website at www.techtalkguys.com.